Hey, you're back with the Geek Whisperers. I'm Matthew Brender.
I'm John Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And we are here today to dig into one of the most common questions all three of us get across the industry, and that is, what does it mean to be engaging with influencers?
Sure. I mean, I get asked this question a lot, and give me a list of influencers, you know, by 5 p.m. today, you know, some executive will come over and ask me for it. Give me a list of influencers. But I have to ask the question, well, what kind of influencers do you want? What do you mean by influencers? And we play a little game, and we eventually get to where they want to be. So this particular request came in, and, you know, it's really kind of a question. Are you talking about technical influencers within our community? Are you talking about kind of media and pundit influencers? Are you talking about IT in general? Are you talking about a particular, you know, storage, networking, virtualization, IT people? Are you talking about CIO influencers? There's you really have to qualify what you're talking about before you just say, give me a list of influencers.
I've actually been wrestling with this week myself. A great, interesting point you have there, John, about the crossover between the leveling. So it becomes, you know, in my company, we talk a lot about the sort of the buying center, right? What group of people we're trying to approach. And I think people often think from traditional PR terms, the influencers are people, the Ohms, the TechCrunches, the Forbes, the more, in some ways, traditional media, heavy quotes, the new traditional tech media, if you will, and are still coming to terms with the fact that there are a significant number of people who I consider quite influential, you know, and another class of bloggers, sort of citizen journalists, if you will, to take it into a journalism metaphor.
That's a powerful idea, Amy. And on the EMC side, where we've got both, I mean, we have a progressive arm that's digging into when somebody says influencer, I think we've done a decent job through social marketing in the, oddly enough, marketing inside EMC to make that conversation lead to a single idea. And that is to have someone who is technologically competent and a social influencer, someone leveraging a social platform like Twitter and LinkedIn and our EMC community network with regular engagement and a strong following to engage about technical information. And that is the sort of de facto standard for what it means to be an influencer that we have been evangelizing, so that we can kind of have that conversation mean something off the bat without having the back and forth that John's dealing with. And it's interesting, though, because that doesn't hit the mark all the time.
How do you split that role up with PR? Because that's another thing. We're sort of project underway of where's your dividing line between when is it a social media experiment and when is it a publicity?
That's a great point. And the best thing, the best line in the sand for us is normally PR is so customer centric, as well as we have a customer reference group that connects into PR, and they're really looking for the paying customer as an influencer, or the paid analyst / media personality. Now, that is a subsection of it, but with the influencer network available to our environment, it is really irrelevant from my standpoint, from a social standpoint and a community building standpoint, whether someone is working at my company, your company, as a customer, or is just an independent enthusiast. We're looking to inspire a day-to-day engagement that is consistent irregardless of where they're working. And that has been the differentiator that has just made sense to people right off the bat. And when we do overlap, there's very strong synergies where it's like, okay, so you're dealing with a customer influencer. Maybe you can help us see if they'd be a good fit for a reference or a beta as well. Or they just kind of like, oh, you want to deal with internal people? Go for it. But slowly, I'm pushing those cogs to go a little faster to try to see that internal and external influencers are equal, if not more important towards the internal lately.
Well, Matt, you really teased out kind of the heart of it. What's your goal? And that is the first question that, you know, I usually end up asking for any inbound inquiry, right? What's your business objective? What's your goal? Are you trying to, like you just described, a technical influencer program and a technical engagement program, which actually all three of us, you know, run on a day-to-day basis. And that's super important. And it's also kind of very interesting from a corporate point of view, because as you also pointed out, it crosses silos. It's not just about customers. It's not just about partners. It's not even just about employees. It's all about all three. So that's a whole I could do a whole section on that, but it's about what are your business goals? Why do you want this list of people? Do you want to listen? Do you want to talk to them? Do you want to find out is something bad about to happen and you want to monitor this list of people for people yelling at us?
Oh,
now, in my case, this was comms coming to me and they actually wanted a list of press and analyst influencers that were active on social. We finally got down to that, and I was able to give that to them. But I explained it's kind of hard because, frankly, many of the customer voices have been hired by us, by VMware, EMC, or Cisco, or somebody, or a partner. So there's really no independent voices. Now, there is that whole class of journalists who are also technological, who write for the trade rags and who are either independent or write for the trade press.
Well, and here's the next question. So, John, that sparks another point of interest for me is, do you own, it sounds like how you parse the data, that you own everybody who's got a social footprint, and it's irrespective of kind of the medium they use. So your first data point, your unique identifier is social footprint, and then you figure the rest out. Is that accurate?
Well, in this case, yes. We're organized. We have community and social media separate from global communications and PR and AR. So we are sister organizations, but we're not part of the same organization. So just because of familiarity, because they're just ramping up kind of their social ability. I mean, the PR folks, in my experience, kind of want to stand behind the scenes a little bit and not directly engage with these folks. So they haven't been super social at VMware, and we have been. So they come to me for when they have a question that is social related. And usually we can pull stuff together.
That's fascinating. It's still kind of traditional in the sense where there's a point of contact that it's the who you know person, which is what you are for your company. Very similarly in my group, I actually know these people face to face. And Amy, that's what you've built up at Cisco, all this collateral of whether it's through Bacon or unicorns or Engineers Unplugged, it seems there's always the right people that you surround yourself with. So despite all our technological savvy, we're still very much like dependent on a couple people knowing others face to face. And I think it's a wonderful thread to pull out of this, that there's still some old-timey respect and trust schemas that are built into what we're doing at scale.
I love the whole trust thing. I actually would completely agree with that. I know we're going to sort of shift into the how and just stick a pin in it if we don't go there now. But I think trust is one of the key things in terms of an authenticity, in terms of how you actually engage with an influencer. And it's almost old-fashioned. It's very interesting that I think we use new age tools to do an old age thing, which is relationship marketing, which I think is why our sales teams tend to understand very much what we're up to, because they understand the concept of building a relationship and talking about things that matter.
I'm picturing myself as like this old mountain, this old 49er in the mountains kind of, I'm looking for gold, but I don't have any giant, machines. It's just me and my pan in the river. So you're making me feel like an old timer.
No, that works. I'm not saying you are an old timer, but it's a good metaphor for kind of sifting through the social data and trying to find it. Now there's
when we've gone out and looked for more sophisticated tools, we have a lot of institutional knowledge in the three of us and in spreadsheets and in databases and things like the VXpert and the EMC Elect program, but I think the state of the industry the state of the industry right now is still pretty immature. Like if you're talking social CRM, how do we institutionally track our interactions with folks? I think I don't think we're going to talk about it here this week, but I think those tools are coming, but they're still not one size fits all for sure.
So how do you know who to go after? I mean, I guess we already hit the point that you need to be very clear about what your business objective is and what that sort of sector you're after, whether it's the technologist at the ground floor, the CIO who's passionate, or network compute virtualization, go after that target and work within those niches.
Well, I'm going to jump in on that one because I feel like I'm the newest to this game in some ways. And I think the amazing part is that people self-select. They raise their hand and they identify themselves. And it's an amazing thing that you can watch the community, the process, the tools of social for a very short period of time, and the answers present themselves. I mean,
that's great.
To John's point, I think you go mining for some of the other nuggets, but I think some of the clearer leaders, the true thought leaders, the people with a lot of voice, and not just the loud people, but truly the influential, who are not always the loudest, and that's another conversational track, but they present themselves.
Well, Amy, so you're let's unpack that for a second. You go out and they present themselves. Well, you're doing that in two ways. One is you put yourself out there personally and vulnerably by tweeting, by making jokes, by coming up with, by inviting people to participate in videos or by tweeting links, by engaging people. So you're putting yourself out there. Did you also enter into this sphere via some sort of a formal listening campaign, which is what sometimes folks in the social media industry will tell you to do?
Well, I have a theory on that, actually, that I sort of talk about high listening versus low listening. So I think that when we're talking about social CRM and programmatic and scale, that people are talking about tools, and we can go into that maybe another time, the tools that you would listen to in aggregate, so the big data kind of analysis to see what rises to the top. And I think that sort of trending listening is important, but I think the other type of listening that you have to do, there's no neat way to do it. It's at the scalpel level, and it's that low listening that you do as an individual, because you put in certain hashtags and you listen and you actually take the time to follow through on the people who are having the conversation. Mm-hmm. So you follow the conversation two or three threads back. You see what the relationships are between those people. You see if anybody's mind was changed. You see who joins in to participate. And that kind of listening, I don't know what you guys think. I've never found any way to do it, but to actually do that myself, because it's really in the same way that I wouldn't job out going to a cocktail party and trying to figure out what the discussion thread is. It's almost the same thing. It really is watching. It's like going to class. I mean, it's a form of learning, and the only way to do it, I think, is hands-on. I'm curious what you guys think, and I think you need both. I think you need high and low listening.
Well, I really love that we got to the point where you're talking about, you know, again, listening to individuals and getting in there and being there. But as John pointed out, I mean, you were saying, I mean, you came out with this Field of Dreams moment that if you tweet, they will come. But you're saying like, okay, they're already tweeting, so you just need to listen. And that balance, though, I love that John hit on the point that you have to be willing to be out there and be vulnerable, being yourself, being both interested in technology and also just whatever you are. I'm a cat-loving, nerdy technologist/marketer guy from Cambridge, Massachusetts. And those things all add up to building a community that you can listen into. So it's like first you have to show up, and then you have to start listening, and then who you're after will kind of present themselves.
But you know how much that freaks out a traditionally trained marketer, right?
Oh, my gosh.
This is not what they do.
And they, do you get the, how do you do that at scale? This isn't about you. It's so, anyway, I'd love to hear your reactions.
Well, it's what I have, it's what I do. So, and I make no pretense to operating at scale, right? I just do my thing. The more John Troyer I am, the more successful I've been. So I'm not, I've crafted my job so that I don't have to worry about the scale conversation. I mean, I do. And we'll talk about it. We can talk about tools and we can talk about metrics and stuff like that. But fundamentally, I'm much more interested in the micro conversation amongst our own community. Now, that is limiting in certain ways, right? I don't know everything that's going on in the networking space. I don't know everything that's going on in the security space. But I can cover my own space and I can cover it well. And, you know, these people are now friends at this point.
Yeah. Well,
okay. I'm going to be a devil's advocate here. So what do you guys say whenever do you get some of the cult of personality arguments of this is about your personal brand versus good for you over good for the company? And what would you say in this context? Because again, if we're all talking about how do we engage and win the trust of influencers, what's your answer?
Ooh, such a good one. Wait, John, you start.
Well,
to go for it.
It has to be so far what works with social is mediated through a social interaction. And I have not seen a branded account that is as engaging and has as interesting conversations as the personal account. We run into that in a lot of ways. I mean, we've had discussions about that. You know, some of our tech marketing folks are superstars, right? They're very well known in the community. They write books. You look at a guy like Duncan Epping, who's written 3 or 4 books about VMware. He has the most popular blog. He speaks. He's well known. He's a rock star, right? And you know, he was part of the tech marketing team. He's moved on to a slightly different role, but there's a real conversation there among him and his colleagues. What do you put on your personal blog versus what do you put on the corporate blog? And we've worked out some kind of guidelines about, well, things that are official, more official and more work product, things that are a little more experimental, or you just did it in your home lab. So we've worked out some rules of thumb. But yeah, then the question that people always ask, well, what happens when Duncan leaves? And you just have to say, well, when Duncan leaves, that's the way the world works now. You know, yeah. He takes his equity with him. I don't think there's much you can do about it.
And that information doesn't stop being valuable to the company. I think that's the argument that should be made the most, that your work as a social influencer and engager, even if you no longer work for Cisco and I no longer work for EMC, the work we've done to build those brands is still valuable to those brands. It's still out there. It's still Google searchable, and it's still built a community engagement around it that, yes, it helped elevate you within the community, but a brand's community is built up of individuals. You can't just have that personality that is quote unquote EMC or Cisco or VMware. It's too impersonal. We like to know each other as individuals. That's why even branded accounts a few years back, or probably even longer, started putting like the caret in their initials to show that there are individuals behind the tweets. And that really, that added a lot for me personally, like just to feel that, hey, there's a real person behind this massive brand that I love.
I completely agree. Nobody loves a logo. You can't, you know, laugh long with a logo. And even though, you know,
sorry,
I think
that,
I think even though the logo accounts, and we're talking about sort of the brand-based accounts for all you, our many thousands of listeners out there, I think that those accounts are great for broadcast, and they are a little bit more toward old school marketing in my mind because they're a bit more the blast out. And I think
which still has a role.
Absolutely
always
has a role. And one of the great examples, one of my mentors told me was, you know, he follows sports, and he said, you know, to be honest, I follow the individual players, and I follow the team. I follow ESPN, but I listen to that very lightly. I'm really interested in hearing from the players themselves, my favorites. And I thought that was such a great analogy for what applies to business, that I think the human nature is, even in something where you're passionate and it's, you know, nothing but fun there, they're still listening to the individuals over sort of the collective. Huh. And in terms of taking your brand with you, I think this is the right attribution. I need to find this out after the show, but I think it's the Ziegler quote, and I'm going to massacre it in the paraphrasing, but the CEO saying, you know, what if we train our people and they leave, and the CIO saying, what if we don't and they stay? And I
think you hit that dead on. I've heard that same quote, and it just makes me smile ear to ear.
And I think that's one of the interesting challenges we have in terms of, once you identify the influencer, are they influential because of the company they work with, or because that influence rides with them? So a bit of a broader question, but interesting.
You're blowing my mind. I'm going to shift us a little bit, because there's something that has come up multiple times, and I see it all throughout the industry, and I think it's something that we could dig into here. I tweeted you guys the other day and said there's a misappropriation between offering content versus demanding messaging when trying to understand influencer engagement. And I just... that came to me after a lot of conversation about how you engage with influencers, and just want to leave that out there and let you run with it.
So beating somebody with a message versus serving up content they want to hear?
The idea of, when you're engaging with an influencer, do you try to give them the message that you want them to have and that you want them to disseminate? Or do you give them content and, you know, you risk the chance that they might not run with it? They might not be interested in blogging about it. How do you...
Content. content. No doubt about that. I had that conversation today over lunch, and I feel 100% that concept of passing on the tweets, that people hear the tweets you should send out as if the words came from your mouth. And again, I'm going on a limb and I may get my head taken off for this. It doesn't work. I have never once cut and paste a tweet out of those suggested tweets in my life, because people would think my account had been hacked. They'd be like, what up, Burger King? That didn't mention bacon or an LOL or an OMG. That's not your voice.
Well, so, and Matt, now you're really talking about the kind of thing where you have a group of let's say, influencers, and since what we're talking about here, you have a group of influencers. They might be employees. They might be brand advocates. Probably, if they are external folks, they might be engaged in some sort of a program with the company, whether that's, you know, Burger King champions or VMware champions. And the scenario you're talking about is, do you just blast out stuff for them that you want them to blast out? Because there are whole companies built around that idea. Is that kind of the scenario you're thinking
of? Yeah. Well, I'm thinking I was definitely leading the witness where making it a false dichotomy where demanding messaging versus offering content. Well, that's an obvious choice. But you see this as Amy was just discussing, and I'll get behind I'll get on the same butcher block if heads are rolling here and say that there's a lot of times I see, you know, suggested tweets and suggested blog content and suggested links, the word suggested just being abusive to the sense of like why somebody is using social in the first place and what it means to have their unique voice as an influencer. And people are giving all this content thinking they're being very helpful, so it'll be very quick for people to post. But they're giving, or they're sort of demanding message rather than providing context and content that might inspire somebody to care to dig in and get that more authentic post out or that more authentic engagement model.
Yeah. I mean, we're in violent agreement this week, I suppose. We should find something to disagree about. But we have a few groups inside our company that send around suggested tweets and things like that. And it's a great shorthand. I used to be very against them. Just because, for all the reasons, it's so unnatural. It's so weird. You don't want everybody tweeting the same thing. Shouldn't the influencers be following the corporate broadcast channels in the first place and then retweeting the stuff that they find interesting? I mean, that's, in general, every time we've tried to develop an internal process to disseminate information, it has failed. And maybe that's on us. I still think it's possible. But the natural way of doing it in social media is for the internal and external co-influencers, advocates with you, to opt in to the same news sources that you're broadcasting or listening to, and then naturally retweeting stuff that's of interest or amplifying messages that are of interest. Now, what you lose there is the ability to give more context. And certainly before product launches and before events, we go out and we enable people with more information, because you do need more context. Like, this is very important, this is not as important. And so we do go out and give some more of that explanatory text, but it's a little more nuanced than this is a suggested tweet.
And I have to say, I will plead guilty. I think early on, again, not thinking through all the implications, I thought the suggested tweet would lighten the load or at least guide people to think how to write it themselves. And I think it actually gives you something of a writer's block now. So I've changed my position. And I think that, and maybe it's, you know, a legacy of sort of traditional press packets. But I think now that if you did a super short, and it's actually something I'm working on with a colleague, you know, a couple of links to the key assets, bullet points that are shorter than 140, with obvious reason being that somebody can add their own character to it, and to be retweet worthy. And the challenge then becomes on all of us to, as we write for those corporate, for those brand accounts, for those dissemination channels, that we not be boring and that we be retweetable in any way that matters. So make the content fresh, make it engaging, make it something that the bloggers want to pick up on. And fully agree with you, John, that the strategy of pre-briefing actually really works. So getting the right people in the room and having the conversation with the expert they need to talk to has been a far more effective strategy than, you know, an email blast that's going to get lost.
Yeah, and I think I unintentionally brought us full circle here, where we talked about what an influencer is, how to identify them, how to go after and engage with them, and then really, how do you get them to engage with us is what we just hit on, where we're looking at, like, what is the content strategy that is actually of interest to them? And we all know it's not the blast anymore. It's not how it works, but really figuring out how to frame the tweets and the content and the reach out through our influencer network to inspire curiosity is like a fascinating task.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I still think in lieu of a better press kit and an internal social kit, you know, we have some folks that send out suggested tweets, and it's okay. I've come to peace with it because it is what it is, right?
Oh, yeah.
You still have to get the word out.
In the same way that a friend of mine is a fantastic chef, and he doesn't ever use a recipe. He just kind of goes from off the cuff with a bunch of ingredients in front of him. I can't function that way. I prefer a recipe, and I might tweak it a tiny bit here and there. And I think that's the same way, where when you have people that are extremely comfortable with social, they're just going to go at it. They're going to write it in their own way. They're just going to – it comes naturally. But like for people who are just getting into it, that suggested tweet is the recipe. They might need to tweak it a little bit for their own voice, but they're just looking for anything to get them started. So I don't want to totally bag on that idea, because it is powerful as a way of getting people more comfortable with a medium that is new and pervasive and something that is infiltrating the traditional marketing world.
Well, I'm gonna be a little cantankerous here. I'm gonna bag on it. I'm gonna say,
do it.
Save your time. Don't write the prescribed tweet. Write a short, not fully 140, so that somebody doesn't get writer's block. And then say, here are the bullet points you can tweet about, along with the links to assets, so that it then forces people in the same way that if they saw a link out in the wild, they would have to write a little something around it. And then again, challenge yourself as opposed to spending the time on these watered down tweets that would sound, yeah, I said it, watered down, that sound like they could come from anybody. Write something from the brand account that is engaging.
I feel like somebody's going to come out and have to be the contrarian here so that we have a little back and forth on this.
But I think that's my role tonight. I didn't know I was going to be that. But
you're doing well. I got to argue against that, to think that a suggested tweet has to be use the maximum 140 characters and just be totally drone worthy. There are really good social media activation kits, as we call it, that have great tweets with like little fun quips or quotes or phrases that really get you engaged enough to want to click things. So there's,
if you show me one, Matt, and I will read it on air, or whatever dare bet challenge. You bring that package to me and I will.
Done. I will send the one I made for the Human Face of Big Data launch that is filled with quips and quotes and little one-liners. And thus I win. I didn't quite cheat, but I'm going to win. Does that mean I won Eddie Saipan's bet or Greg's bet to stump you? Does that count?
I don't think that stumps me. No, I don't think that there's any stumping of me. I'm still talking.
Yeah, we haven't. We haven't executed yet here. Is that something, hey, Matt, is that something you're willing to share to the public?
Oh, absolutely. The overall idea of how we formulate a social media activation kit, I think that it would actually be very valuable to post out there on the blog.
I've always actually thought you guys, your activation kits for launches and events over the years have been good, EMCs, better than ours. I think and my excuse is you have more people, but I don't know. You came up with it. There's been a good template there. There's been several years of refining it. I think yours are pretty good.
Oh, definitely. I joined a very mature team, and I can't take any of the credit for myself. I just used a template that they developed over the years that has slowly gotten better and better and is just clean, crisp, has like three call to actions at the top and then some link collateral. I'll show you. It's really good. I'm glad you suggested we share it out.
Then I feel like we should talk about the other elephant in the room that we talked about a little bit before. I sent out.
I take offense to that.
Oh, good.
Oh, wait, you're not talking about.
If I could offend you, let me know how, and no. I will totally go there.
No, you
wouldn't.
I
think controversy is good. Okay, I won't. But we were talking about clout. I don't think you can talk about influencers without talking about clout, whether you want to or not. And you know, what do you guys think? I asked the question on Twitter what people thought about clout. And we determined it was begrudging acceptance. Matt, John, what do you think?
Oh yeah, I kind of love clout. I'm not gonna lie. I love it I love it a little bit more than I want to admit publicly, but I'm doing that right now. That I actually just popped out a blog post on this, and I really think clout is the count that we love to hate, and we love it because it gives us some direction. For better or worse, the fact that, you know, Amy and John are ranked a bit above me, and Justin Bieber's way ahead of all of us, and really boring companies are way below all of us. Like, it just kind of, it has that idiot check sense to it where, yeah, you're like, yeah, that's about right. That's, but then you see those jumps up and down that drive you crazy. But the fact that I can get kind of like a hot, cold temperature of where I fit in this social ecosystem I plug myself into, I actually find kind of impressive that somebody was able to crack that nut.
I'll be the contrarian here. I dislike clout. And here's why. So it gave you a way of ranking yourself. Okay, great. But the number, it's one scale, and it does not reflect authority within a given community, which is what I'm trying to use it for something it's not meant for.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, can you go into what do you mean by authority too?
Well, it doesn't give me the relative importance of people in a community. So I look at clout scores. So let's take Scobalizer, right? Scobalizer, huge Robert Scoble, huge clout score, very influential on Twitter and social media in general, and Google, Facebook. Zero influence in the community I'm interested in. Don't know who Robert Scoble is from Adam, right? He works on startups. He works on gadgets. He's very good at the Facebook versus Google versus Twitter kind of fights that go on in TechCrunch. Nothing enterprise IT. He's just not that kind of dude. Doesn't interest him. And so the fact that he has a high clout score should in no way mean that he ever shows up on one of my influencer lists, unless I'm going for the TechCrunch crowd. And the only way I can put that in is with human intelligence right now. You know, it just doesn't scale for me.
Yeah, it doesn't work with like the different niches, or actually I would even say like the different herds of people that we have floating around, that there are going to be these different people that poke out. But if you already know who you're surrounded by, you already know your surroundings, then you can kind of do a gut check of where you fit amongst the ranks.
Right. But I can also go to their Twitter account, see how many people they follow, see what they're tweeting about, see how active they are in general over the past couple of weeks. And I bet I can come to a pretty good close approximation of their clout score anyway.
Well, I think that is a really interesting point, because I actually did a clout comparison. Again, the tool we love to hate. I have very mixed feelings about clout, because I think you can game the system, and you know, that it doesn't always indicate level of influence. And within a community, I think that's very well put, which gets us back to the whole question of what influence is at a broader, you know, what is it you want someone to do with it? Is it someone who can get people to change their mind, buy our products, you know, precisely what it is that is valuable to me in engaging with someone we identify as influencer? And clout can't measure the subtlety of that by any stretch. So I think there is like personal research you have to do, but it was a really interesting measure to sort of see across the board. I will confess, I ran clout scores on everybody who's been on Engineers Unplugged, and just as sort of as an experiment to make clear to an audience that isn't necessarily as conversant in the world we live in, what we were talking about here. And I was surprised, actually. I thought it would prove my point, but it disproved it at a certain level. There were people who I think are quite influential that didn't have scores that I thought were reflected. And they're not playing the game. You know, they're too busy out actually doing and influencing and not necessarily playing the clout game. So,
oh, but there you go. You're crossing your streams there, where you're saying that this is a metric that was useful, but then you found a case that disproves it. So you're adding in the human touch that is the kind of influencer one-on-one that you know them personally, so you know they must be influential. But like the metric either has to be like a standard or it's not a standard, and we kind of like are having our cake and eating it too if we do it that way.
No, I think she's arguing it's not as useful. It's not predictive.
Did what I needed it to do. I mean, I used it for what I refer to as the Thor's hammer of social media, because it made a very strong point, and I will share that slide offline with you guys. I cannot share that publicly, but if somebody wants to talk to me at some point, I mean, I can tell you my strategy. But it made a point, and it made a very, very strong one. However, it didn't make in terms of individuals, I thought a very accurate one. And it wouldn't be a tool that I think somebody who was, to John's point, somebody who was disengaged with the community couldn't draw the proper conclusions. They would see person X as more influential than person Y, and it absolutely isn't true.
Sure, yeah. It misses the subtleties that are human interaction.
And it admits it's trying to grade us all on a global scale. And, you know, Brad Hedlund, who just joined, you know, VMware and is a networking guru, says something about software-defined networking. I'm going to listen to him, even if he's not very active on Twitter. And I don't know what his cloud score is. But, hey, I don't want this to become a tools. I think too often inside baseball conversations become fixated on tools and what tools you're using. And I like the fact that we haven't really gone down that route yet. But I did want, since we're talking about cloud, I did want to bring up a favorite thing I've been kicking the tires on lately, which is Little Bird. Are you guys familiar with that?
No, I haven't touched it yet.
I like the name.
Little Bird is Marshall Kilpatrick's company. He was a founder of Read Write Web, which is now readwrite.com. And it basically takes a network analysis look at things. You give it a couple seed keywords or a couple seed people, and it does a who's following who calculation. And there I did the test of VMware folks, and it replicated very well who I thought was influential and who was not. So by looking at who is following whom, it teases out kind of your 500. It pulls out 500 influencers around that topic or in that social graph. Now, I could see where if it works for professional graphs, that's what you're doing on Twitter, I could see where it could get very confused when graphs overlap, and you know, you could probably cross the streams in a bad way. But it's pretty interesting. I would try it out. It's too expensive for my blood, but it's worth trying out.
I don't know if I would feel more or less comfortable to find out you had run Little Bird on us.
I think we're all following each other. I hate to ruin that for the anticipation for the podcasters out there, but I think
I'm going to unfollow Matt as a way of starting a fight.
This is going to be just like Thanksgiving. Wait a minute. Never mind. But really, I think the influencer engagement model, the one thing's for sure, we all are invested in it personally and professionally. And big companies are only showing more and more engagement, from frequent flyer programs to the Microsoft MVPs to VMware vExperts to EMC Elects. There's always room for engagement with people that are crucial to the social infrastructure. And I'm sure we're going to dig even further into how individuals can build their own reputation and also be part of that influencer engagement in future episodes. And with that, another fine episode of the Geek Whispers. Shh. Okay.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.